Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. Ah. Plantation, plantation.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show. This is the Manchester United edition. I'm your host, Tosin, as always. I have my co-host today, Brent. Some of you know him, some of you may not. For those who don't know who Brent is, he's the greatest Trini person to ever happen to Man United. Dwight York is the second closest, but Jadon Sancho is all the way in last. But this is the greatest Trini to ever happen to Manchester United. What's going on, Brent? How are you?
What's good?
I'm
good, brother. Yeah, you know, I'll take top two. Not behind Jadon Sancho. Yeah. That waste man, for sure. But yeah, I'll take top two.
Good. So let's talk about the game today. United beat Burnley 1-0. Same starting 11 he's using the Premier League, except Dorgu dropped to the bench for Diogo Dalot. So I was going to ask you, one, what is Ruben's issue, and how did you feel about the lineup when you saw it?
I mean, first reaction, frustrated with lineup. There are things about the starting lineups that they understand. I guess I understand Šeško not starting because he played 90 minutes on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, he only played 90 minutes on Wednesday, right? And it was 90 minutes where we had most of the ball. So, because it went to penalties, usually we think like, oh yeah, we played 120 minutes. It was just one match. We had most of the ball. I understand he didn't have much of a preseason. But I think he should have been fit enough to start. Same thing, you know, Casemiro, Bruno, again, in midfield. Dalot, I can understand rotating one of the wingbacks. I don't understand bringing in a fullback at wingback to play on his wrong foot. I think the stubbornness with the things that Amorim will compromise on and the things he will not compromise on is frustrating. Because clearly he will compromise on playing players out of position, but he will not compromise with certain positions with players not being fully fit, even if the players who are fit can't meet the requirements of that position anyway. And obviously we know he's not compromising on the baseline setup, right? Baseline formation. So, yeah. I mean, that was my initial thoughts. Didn't see anything in the lineup to make me feel like something was going to be different. And yeah, I don't really think much was different today.
Yeah. And before the game started, I mean, I kind of thought we were going to lose. How did you feel before the game started?
Actually, if I would have guessed something like what happened, where we didn't play well enough to win comfortably, pull out a result anyway, and then we end up treading water for this international break. How many times did that happen with Ten Hag, with Solskjaer, with Mourinho, even, where the individual qualities of the players are good enough to pull out a result, either for themselves or to bail out the manager? How many times did that happen under Ten Hag? Ten Hag had some of the most amazing results in the last 10 years. Solskjaer had some of the most amazing results in the last 10 years. And ultimately, what those results did was just delay the inevitable anyway. Because if a guy is not good, but today Bruno in years past, Bruno, Rashford, somebody would pull a rabbit out of their hat. And it's like, all right, well, maybe there's enough there to let this guy cook for a while longer. And there might be, but I think if we keep letting the future of a manager reside on how one result goes, we will just end up back in the same position. So, yeah, I felt like, I didn't feel like you were going to lose because it's Burnley. I mean, to be fair, Burnley will probably be playing in the Championship next season. And we didn't, yeah, we played better than them. But if you win on in the 97th minute, you didn't blow them off the park, you know? Like, if we had drawn that game, or if the penalty wasn't given, I wouldn't have said, like, ah, what a tragedy that we got robbed. You know, we're not good. So, I didn't think we were going to lose. I also didn't think we were going to do anything different that we've seen recently.
It's the same old things, man. Like, let's talk about how the game started. It was a frantic start from both sides. In the third minute, Cunha had a good touch and a shot. Then a minute and a half later, there was a cross for a header. And I noticed something that United don't like to build through the midfield. I'm not sure if that's a Ruben thing or if that's like maybe me just being too much of a nerd, but I noticed that United hate going through the middle. It's like they get the ball in the middle and immediately try and go to the wings and then try and press up high from there. Have you noticed that as well?
Yeah, I think that's a feature, not a bug. Because the way he sets up his team, you know, however it way they could have 3-4-3, 3-5-2, 5-3-2, whatever, you know, in possession or possession, the shape, you could say the shape kind of changes. But ultimately, because every system tries to create advantages in different phases or different parts of the pitch, right? There's the same 11 on 11, no matter what formation you're playing. So every formation is, all right, where do we create an advantage? And for him, or for his approach, his advantage is usually through overloads with the wing-backs, 10s, center midfielders, inside center backs, in those kind of wider areas. So that's where a lot of the play will get funneled through. Most of the play doesn't go through the midfielders, right? The midfielders are there. Arguably, their more important work is off the ball. And then if they're able to create, if they're able to, like, you know, break the game with a pass, that's good. But they're not really there to combine, which is our only really fit central midfielder, Menu. Like, those combinations is one of his biggest strengths, right? Being able to receive the ball. But this system doesn't really plan for that, because most of the time, like, they're covering the most amount of space.
Yeah.
And when they have players next to them to combine, it's usually when they are pushing up into those wide areas or, you know, dropping to receive the ball from one of the center backs or something. But they don't play, like, a central role in the build-up, which is annoying, because we don't have athletes who could cover. I mean, we have Ugarte, who's an athlete who could cover ground, but he's also one of the worst players on the ball I've ever seen in my life. So we don't have players who could cover ground and also move the ball. So I just don't think it works. Like, you end up highlighting the weaknesses of somebody like Casemiro, even though Casemiro this was his best performance this season today. Yeah. We're playing Burnley when people are talking about the manager being sacked next game.
Yeah.
You know, like, coming through in the clutches, that's Casemiro's thing. He's been doing that for 10 years. So yeah. The difference is that now his level of clutches home against Burnley when the manager's job is on the line. You know what I mean? Like, all right, we get his performance now. We know we're not getting it after the international break, especially now he's back playing for Brazil. So, yeah, it just doesn't. The things that his midfielders need to do in the system doesn't suit the midfielders we have.
Yeah,
and he hasn't made any adjustment to the players he actually has.
I mean, I noticed it last year. I noticed it this year, but I was like, I want to give him time. But it wasn't until the Grimsby Town game, I was just like, I don't like this no more. I was like, what was it that Matla said? He goes, I done sung along the rappers I don't believe in. And that's the same thing I feel like with Ruben. It's like, I don't believe in the way you orchestrate through the middle, but I'm going to lie to myself enough. But that Grimsby Town game, I was like, that's enough. And even today, we got lucky that Leslie Ogbuchukwu did not decide to go full Nigerian and Igbo on us and run through the midfield. It was a couple of times, but Leslie almost did it. And that's what to do. You know, Fulham did as well last week when they ran through the middle. And, like, I don't know what United's curse has been lately, where we hire managers who neglect the midfield. I genuinely cannot stand that that's what we've been doing lately. Just hiring managers who's like, I don't care about the midfield. And it's very annoying to see, because this is a team that we grew up on watching Scholes, Ian Carrick, and Roy Keane, and Nicky Butt, the likes of actually developing play through the middle. Now it's just like, get it out wide, get it high, and just press. And it's like, what is that? So,
what's funny is that, like, we play different systems, right, under different managers, but managers will also, even though in theory, supposedly we have a system now where it's not the manager in charge of recruitment, you still need to have a recruitment team, a football structure that could say to the manager, like, yeah, I know it's frustrating that you can't score any goals, but we need to get some legs in that midfield. Like, yeah, I understand you had Casemiro to the team. Now he understands, like, the requirements better. He's playing better. He's not going to be better next year than he was this year when he already didn't have the legs. So I don't know if it's an Amorim thing. I don't know if it's a whatever, Wilcox, Berada, whoever, right? But the last deeper lying midfielder in their prime that we bought was Morgan Schneiderlin. And he was dog shit, right? Like, the fakest midfielder we ever bought in, I don't even know how many years, like, from the Premier League. Like, they were, like, the players were laughing at him and training because they were like, who is this guy? But everybody else was either past their prime or not a deeper line midfielder.
Yeah. I mean,
like, everybody.
Bastien, Casemiro. Who else have we
washed.
Signed? Yeah.
Washed. Herrera was end up playing six sometimes. That was not his role. Fred end up playing six sometimes. Not his role.
Sometimes we trap McTominay back there. McTominay's not a six at all.
McTominay was playing like as a second striker, you know, coming through the U teams before he had that group spurt or whatever it was. Like, you know, like, we haven't bought who's a player who's in his prime or entering his prime, who is their role is to play deeper in midfield. It's Morgan Schneiderlin, and then you could go from there up to Ugarte. And both of those players was trash. Like, two players we get tricked on. Just terrible. And Ugarte is not even... I think Ugarte is getting exposed. That's the environment. Like, we don't have alternatives. Like, you need to be able to put your foot on the ball, because we needed somebody to come in and be that guy. So when you can't pass a ball, you can't receive a ball on the half turn, we need you out.
Yeah. I mean, to your point about recruitment team, you know, Jurgen Klopp wanted Julian Brandt. That was his, like, wanted Brandt at Liverpool. And Liverpool's recruitment team's like, no, we're getting Mo Salah. I don't care what you say. Like, we're signing Salah. So imagine if he got his way and didn't get Salah. You know, Liverpool wouldn't be where they are. That's why you need a team to tell coaches sometimes, hey, listen, you got too much of an ego. Shut the fuck up and we're going to take control here. And that's what United needs to tell those guys. Like, listen, you need midfielders, okay? You can't keep trotting around Ugarte and Casemiro. And again, there's a lot of stuff we might not know about behind the scenes, you know? So, but... what I see, we need midfielders badly.
Oh, man. Yeah, because we have four players playing in midfield. One is one of the best playmakers in Europe playing out of position. Who, like, you see it today. Like, when Bruno is when the game is fast paced and Bruno is just probing, pushing buttons, breaking the game open, you're like, oh yeah, this is why you play him deeper. But that shouldn't be your default game state. And it's not going to be, because most teams aren't going to be as bad as Burnley. And Casemiro, the moment you mentioned in the first half, when he got turned, that could have happened a million more times, right? Like if they had midfielders running at him all the time. Ugarte, not good enough. And then Kabimino. Like that's not enough. That's like one, not yet in their prime, actual midfielder. One midfielder in his prime who's not good enough. Another midfielder way too past his prime for the Premier League. And then somebody else who's not actually a midfielder, but somebody who could do a job there to an extent. Like, that's just not enough. Like, I was listening to Talk the Devils, and Carl, pick up Carl, was saying how one of the ways that you back somebody, right, is you cover for their weaknesses, right? Like backing up a player or a manager or a friend or whoever is not just supporting them for whatever they want to do. You know, sometimes as a friend, the thing you need to hear is, yeah, you island.
Yes.
Like, I know it's frustrating to, like, we could have won a lot more games if we could have finished chances. But you do understand that we're losing a lot more in midfield than we're losing anywhere else. Like, I get it. To play your way, to get some results, that you want to get the team bought in, you want to get the fans on your side, you need goals in the team. But we need to get some legs in that midfield right now. You know? Like, and I'm not sure, so to what the reason I reference. The point is that, you know, Carl's point was Amorim has been backed to the extent that they gave him players, but not backed to the extent that his weaknesses, his blind spots, his shortcomings were covered for. Because if that is your manager, yeah, he's young, he has good ideas, but he's going to have some weaknesses and blind spots because he's young. Because he had some early success, so maybe he has too much confidence in what he did. We saw the same thing with Ten Hag. Like, yeah, you want to play this kind of style with these wide open spaces in midfield. Yeah, you could do that shit in the Netherlands when the team you're employing is like way better than all the other teams. You could do that shit in Portugal when the team you are coaching, the talent you have access to is way better than all but one or two other teams.
Yeah.
You can't out in the Barclays, though. Like, the 17th team in the Barclays has two monsters in midfield. Like, you can't get away with just any two guys in there. You know?
Vincent Kompany said this in his press conference the other day. It's just like, the reason why people come to Premier League is money. He goes, we're competing now with mid-table Premier League teams. You know, it's like, Leipzig has to compete with Burnley for players.
Yeah. You know,
Premier League.
Brentford made a record bid for a Dortmund player.
This week. Max Bayer.
Yeah. Dortmund is a Champions League level Bundesliga club. Brentford is just some team. Like, Brentford's just some guys.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Brentford's a team on the way when you leave the airport. Like, literally, when you leave, like, Gatwick, you see Brentford. That's where they're at.
Brentford in 15 years is a trivia question.
Yeah.
Like, oh, who's out of team in the league that time? It's like a streets won't forget. Like, they could have a bad year recruitment, go down and wouldn't see them for 10 years. We don't know.
Yeah.
You know, they're not a big club, but they're bidding £45 million for, you know, Dortmund's best prospect right now. That's crazy.
Insane. Let's talk a little bit more about the game. 15th minute, there was a penalty shout. Once the VAR got overturned, Mason Mount pressed Kyle Walker, who batted with Kyle Walker. He's my
washed.
Age. He is
washed.
Cooked food. He is finished. And Mason Mount got fouled in the box, but VAR said it was not a penalty because not only did Kyle Walker pull him, but Diallo got pulled as well. Mason Mount got pulled as well. Do you think that was a penalty?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I mean, it's borderline, that call. I think that's one of those, like, if they gave it in real time, would have been fine. If they didn't, also would have been fine. Not a great weekend for VAR generally. Like the Chelsea Fulham decision to pull back a goal, crazy. Mm-hmm. Couple of decisions today. Yeah, I mean, I think it could have been a penalty. It's also just you run at full speed, you come together. It's borderline. I was fine. Like, I was annoyed, but ultimately fine that not being given.
Yeah. But then in the 27th minute, United finally got a goal. Josh Cullen got our own goal. I was talking shit in the week that Josh Cullen was going to run through our midfield. Not only did I know, not knowing that Josh Cullen would score for us. So we still couldn't score a goal for ourselves in the Premier League, but shout out to Josh Cullen for that. So,
listen, shout out to set pieces. Like, we've been seeing since preseason. Like, we look dangerous and from set pieces of preseason, which is the first time we could say that in a long time. We still can't defend set pieces for shit. But attacking set pieces, I feel like we're going to score a lot more goals. Between Casemiro, well, inshallah, Casemiro will not be in the team. But Casemiro is an aerial threat from set pieces. Yoro is a threat. De Ligt and Maguire, whichever one I'm playing. Heaven if he's in a team. And then we have multiple set piece takers now. Mbumo, big plus, because, you know, we could change things up with Jesse Bruno taking all the set pieces. Luke Shaw can take set pieces, obviously, if he is in the team as well. So we have more takers and more threats from set pieces. So I feel like we'll see more. Obviously, today was an own goal, but that came from Casemiro header. Good ball from Bruno, good header from Casemiro. I feel like we'll see more of those. I was happy with that just because, like, it's been so long where we've just been wasting set pieces.
Yeah.
Again, we're not great on the other end, but at least attacking them, we're doing something.
Yeah, we're getting better. Unfortunately, 28th minute, Cunha got an injury. Somebody said, that's what happens, and I quote, that's what happens when you play Cunha 90 minutes against fucking Grimsby and have him start 2 days later.
I mean, this is the injuries you get when you're desperate. Not that we were desperate today, but we had $500 million or pounds worth of players playing on Wednesday because we couldn't finish off Grimsby Town was supposed to be the kind of tie where you don't mess around, you start with your strongest team, and then an hour into the game, you're able to bring, you know, that was the time to, all right, Mazraoui, fresh back from injury, we could give him another run out. Fredrickson, this is your time to shine, you know. OB, get some minutes off the bench. Xerxes, get some legs back. Instead, we have all our stars playing 90 minutes against Grimsby. So, yeah, no, we'll see. I mean, we have to wait and see what it is. But obviously, Cunha had played. He signed early. So, you know, he was involved all preseason. Played all the matches so far. So, yeah, it's kind of, it's early in the season. To be fair, to blame, you know, how many minutes are on the legs, but yeah.
Yeah.
Ideally, he wouldn't have been playing 90 minutes and taking penalties against Grimsby Town.
Yeah, and then Sesko came on. Well, not Sesko didn't come on. We're confused because it was
Xerxes came on
instead of Sesko. Mm-hmm. And then it will end up being in Mbeumo up front with Mason on the left and Xerxes on the right. Mm-hmm. Whatever, man. 36 minutes, Hannibal had a chance, skied it. 39th minute, Ahmad had a chance, and he fired it over. That was a good, that was not the other chance that Ahmad missed, but it was one of the chances he missed. Mm-hmm. There's another chance, Mason Mount hit the bar. Ahmad had a volley, and then in the 5 minutes later, Ahmad had a miss. You know, it was a great chance on the counterattack where Xerxes found Ahmad found Mbeumo, and Mbeumo found Ahmad. It was a great counterattack. Mm-hmm. It was just frustrating. That's all that was. I think our finishing was very, very frustrating because Xerxes had a chance in the 50th minute. And instead of him shooting properly, Xerxes decided to be a little pretty boy. So we missed a lot of chances in the first half. Then we had halftime. So my question for you at halftime is, what was your thoughts on the first half? And we had 15 shots in that half and one own goal conceded. So how do you feel?
I mean, you know, we've been saying the same thing for mostly the last few years. you know, how many games we watch where we say, God, different story if we finish our chances. But if you say that a couple of times a season, that's football. If you're saying that consistently and you think that's the difference between finishing a couple of places above relegation and competing for European places, you're wrong. Because at that point in time, it's not luck, right? Like finishing will typically even out over a season. You'll always have some matches more costly than others. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is still the quality of chances that we create. Because when I was watching a game this was like midway through the second half.
Yeah.
When it was 2-2, one of the commentators had said that like our XG for the game was 2.66 or 2.7, somewhere around there. Which is good, but not crazy. Right? So, you know, you could say whatever you want about XG, but ultimately it is giving you an idea of what quality of chances we're creating in the game. So we had some good chances, but we didn't have that many quality chances. Yeah. And also, we don't have that many good finishers. Like, our best finish, Ahmad missed two, and the reason it was frustrating is because Ahmad is one of our two or three best finishers, and he's our best wingback. So your other best finisher right now is one of your deeper line midfielders. So you have Bruno and Ahmad playing relatively far from goal, and the players that are closer to goal are not your best finishers. Like Mbomo, if you take last season as evidence, you know, some people say last season cannot overperform, whatever. Cunha, decent. Šeško, TBD, right? Because that's a project striker. Yeah. Zirkzee, we already know, not going to be finishing all the chances. Mount has good technique, but Mount is not a natural goal scorer. Casemiro, good technique, but again, God willing, Casemiro will be, you know, in a VIP box watching the game, not starting. So, I think not having very good finishers in the team and just not creating high quality chances, we will see that kind of thing happen. Okay. That said, I was happy with how much we were on top. Not sustainable because it was frenetic and it was frantic. And we could get away with that against Burnley. Burnley were playing our back four. They were allowing us to, have those advantages in the wide areas to, like, you know, where we were outnumbering them in certain phases. That will not happen most of the time this season. And that piece we were playing at slightly out of control, that shouldn't happen most of the time either. So, Happy with it. But one, not sustainable. Two, we didn't finish our chances anyway, which is indicative of the kind of chances we create and also the finishers we have. So, again, good in that, you know, watching our bar, you know, so I'm watching us play well, and he's like, oh yeah, feeling good. But when you zoom out, when you step back, you realize, we're not really seeing anything different yet.
No. And then halftime came, Kobe Mainoo came on, and then the 54th minute, Burnley got a goal through Lyle Foster, which is frustrating as hell. But Man United immediately got them back, and Mbeumo scored his first Premier League goal, our first ever, like, non-own goal, so to say. Xerxes had a flick on, Dalot had a cross, and then Mbeumo's run was great. The thing I noticed about Mbeumo's run, and I know I'm a nerd because it made me so happy that this is a thing that most of our players haven't done in the past, where he made a run and the defender went with him, but he checked his run. So the defender, by the time the defender looked back, he was already shooting. Usually what will happen is our forwards will try and run the ball into the net. And that's why I was like, okay, this is actually a smart player. We actually signed a smart player for once, because in the past, you know, I know Garnacho's young. Garnacho would have tried to run the ball into the net and then end up shooting all over. But you have a guy who's smart enough to check his run, like, hey, I'm not going to go all the way to the defender now. I'm a lie to him in a sense. I'm going to finish it. And that's how you see the difference when that's how United made it 2-1. So,
yeah. And he's faster. Listen, Garnacho has a lot of qualities, but he does not have that elite change of pace. And he doesn't yet have that bag, right? Like, he doesn't have the separation in him. Mbeumo has that. Now, I don't know how Mbeumo will look in 18 months from now when we're like, we pay £71 million for this, you know? But right now, that's a grown man. And that's a grown man who could outpace and outmuscle defenders, and he could finish. So I think when him and Ahmad learn to dovetail well, that's going to work.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Really, really well, potentially.
Yeah. Then in the 62nd minute, Bruno had a chance, and it went just wide. The volley that Bruno had, which is really good.
Mm-hmm. Technique. Which is the second set piece routine. That almost, because the first one was the Ahmad volley in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one, the Bruno volley. Like, we're cooking up something. I think that's a good sign.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel good
about
what we're doing with set pieces.
Yeah, then in the 65th minute, unfortunately, Burnley scored. It's a scrappy goal, more of a comedy of errors, like the commentator said. And it kind of summed up Man United in a sense in the last 12 years, mm-hmm. where Casemiro had a stupid pass to Lenny Euro that went out for a throw, and Lenny was trying to chase it. Then you have a goalkeeper who hits off of Mainu. The goalkeeper doesn't save it, and then they end up... It was a mess. And I think that kind mm-hmm. of goal sums up us as a fan base, sums up the players, the team. It's just... It doesn't make any sense. None of this makes... It has to be spiritual at this point. That's how I thought. I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
Our issues are up to God. It has nothing to do with me anymore. This is way above my pay grade.
We have not a good goalkeeper in 6 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more than that. We had, for most of my life watching football, we had great goalkeepers. Right? Yeah, Schmeichel, one of the best ever. I mind you, we had some stinkers in there too, but the bad ones didn't last. Like, Barthez was a lunatic, but he was there for 2 years, and we won the league in that time. The Tim Howard, Roy Carroll era. Not great, won a league in that time. And Tim Howard still went on to have a very solid Premier League career.
My brother, you missed
What do you mean? Oh, you mean like Taibbi and...
Yeah.
Oh, I just mean like for players who played for like a long period of time, like stretches, you know what I mean?
I was just triggered because when you say goalkeepers, I remember Taibbi and I never forget Mark Bosnich. Those two...
We had some funky, but they didn't really play. Like, Taibbi didn't play for that long. Bosnich didn't really play. Like, Tim Howard and Roy Carroll were, especially Howard, were like number ones, you know? Barthez was number one.
This is when Tim Howard had hair, by the way.
You know, but that's still a player who, he wasn't at the level that we needed, but that's a Premier League player. You think mm-hmm. Bayern is going to have a decade-long Premier League career. He's one of the worst keepers at corners I've ever seen in my life at any level. Like, this cannot catch a ball, right? And then today, his distribution was very good, right? Which is supposedly the thing that we bought Onana for anyway. And he still gave away a goal because that weak attempt at stopping the shot where he just parried back into the danger area wasn't a shot with a lot of pace either.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a reminder, like, he is not that guy at all. And the guy he's keeping on the bench, Onana, distribution very good, shot stopping, decent, like his command of his area, everything. I've never seen a goalkeeper single-handedly knock us out of our competition.
Multiple times.
And those are our two senior goalkeepers right now.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And so, there's nothing, even if you combine both their attributes, they'll still be a bad goalkeeper.
Still, because you still have somebody who's going to just give up goals.
Back on the Bayern Deer point about his distribution, it was his distribution that came to the second goal, by the way, because he had that super long ball to Xerxes, who headed it down to Dalot, who crossed it into Mbeumo. So his distribution is a lot better than Onana's in the first place. So yeah, end up being 2-2. In the 85th minute, Šeško had a chance. And then the 91st minute, we had a penalty shout. And thank God for VAR, because it ended up being a penalty and Bruno ended up scoring. So yeah, it was very, very interesting that we finally got a goal to end the game. Was it deserved? Don't care.
Yeah. I mean, that's football. Deserved enough, you know. Overall, we were the better team, but if you look at our results in the last year, we've been overall the better team 10 times when we didn't win, mm-hmm. right? Of all the losses and draws that Amarin has. In mm-hmm. many of those, we were overall the better team. So, yeah, I feel like on balance of things, we deserve to win, but it wasn't overwhelming or anything. You know, it came from the best of what we get from Amada, right wing back, right? Being able to drive at players from, you know, making an angle run and make use of his dribbling. But we also saw mostly second half, how many times did the ball go to Dalot? And Dalot wasn't bad. Like, Dalot's second half was actually decent. But Dalot was our right back playing left wing back in a system that's relying on wing backs to create overloads. Probably over relying with how much we need wing backs to be good in order for your system to work. And you have a guy who is a solid, fit, physical right back utility man squad option.
Mm-hmm.
Being one of your primary creators. It's a systemic problem. That's not what's wrong with Dalot? It's like, wait, why is Dalot there and why is he getting the ball so much?
You know,
Ahmad was getting the ball a lot. Ahmad is able to create, but why are we relying on Ahmad to go on a run and get fouled and bail us out in 97 minutes at home against Burnley?
You know, I saw this thing today. A couple people were like posting screenshots of like the chances missed. It's like, oh, this is an Emirates system. It's like, on a micro level, yeah, I understand like these chances aren't his issues. But when you look at a macro level, when you look at the bigger picture, this whole game is just a system thing to me, because like, yeah, we should have blown Burnley out, created chances, whatever. But we play City and Chelsea next. If we play the way we played today against City and Chelsea, we're going to get slapped.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, give me a wax.
We played against a team who knows they're going down. Okay, we played against a team who's close to stats that wear Tom Brown on the sidelines. That this is not going to bode well when you go against a guy who's wearing Mason Margiela and Pep Guardiola. You know, so you know it's one of those things where it's just like, listen, man, it's nice to beat Burnley and go into the, you know, go into national break not losing. I understand you get your first 3 points of the season, but remember, at the end of the day, tougher tests are coming, and they're coming literally immediately.
What's killing me though is that we might get a result against it. Like would that surprise? That wouldn't surprise me. No. That wouldn't surprise me at all if we, because we've gotten results against City with every match,
mm-hmm.
and we were still shit.
I mean, we beat City like last players, year
because the players are good. Like, or a lot of the players are good, and they have pride, you know. So to be up for it,
yeah,
I wouldn't be shocked at all if we got a result, or even won against City. But I also think like the result against City wouldn't mean anything in as far as if Amarim's system and coaching is working.
Yeah,
like these players, under every manager we've had since Moyes, could turn up in a big game. That's why we won so many cups. That's how come we beat City so many times, got so many crazy results. they have the quality to go and do it, but are they doing it because of the way they're set up and prepared, or in spite of? Because when it gets hard, like against Grimsby, and Amarim was saying this, players will just do their own thing. And when they need a result, when it's a big occasion, they might do their own thing also. Just they might do their own thing in the group.
Yeah. So now with the game's over, I saved a couple of messages that people posted in the timeline. Someone said, chasing the goal against the side is probably going to be relegated. Coach keeps his back five, takes over defender for defending. Ultimately, we don't have that many players in the box and relying on Šeško to be able to walk, to walk the ball into the net. That was one thing. Someone says the system doesn't put these players into spaces to succeed enough and doesn't make enough use of the middle. What we've been saying, it's like almost as if they pump and dump the ball. You pump it forward, you pump it into the box, dump it off to the guy behind you. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to nitpick a 3-2 win. I mean, a win's a win at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But we've watched too much football in our lives. I think that we've experienced and seen enough football in our lives to know, like, especially the last 10 years, to know that this is not sustainable. This is not sustainable. This can't run, and this is not. So,
have we seen, like, Van Gaal used to do this, right? Like, so Amarim has Van Gaal's stubbornness with worse results. Like, Van Gaal's football is boring, but it was boring on purpose, right? It was boring by design. But, you know, Van Gaal used to do this, like, straight fullback swap all the time. Just swap out fullbacks. But even Van Gaal, initially, remember, he was buying when he bought Marcus Rojo and, like, his first Daily Blind, his first window. It was also to play three at the back. And he switched. And this is probably the most egotistical, stubborn coach he ever had.
Yeah.
More than Mourinho, probably. And Amarim, you know, still isn't switching. Okay, fine, I get it. But the like-for-like wide centre-back swaps, you're not... I could see changing a player without changing the system, and you could very much change how the game will be played.
Yeah.
And yes, Mazraoui has different qualities to Euro, but it's not that different for the last couple of minutes of a game to give you something different. Right? Like, if you send on, if you take off one of your wide center backs, if you take off Euro, or if you take off, if Shaw or Lisandro Martinez was playing, and you take off one of them and you put on which of the your two center backs is on the bench, you put on Maguire. It's like, all right, that's clearly for aerial threat. Right? Or you get somebody who's going to be more likely to drive with the ball or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What are you getting going from Euro to Mazraoui? Unless Euro was cramping or starting to limp, what are you doing there? You're clearly not changing the system. You're not really changing the profile of the player. It's one thing if you send on, if you make a change and now you have, like, Collins against Grimsby, Mason Mount, left wing back, or you have Mbeumo, right wing back, so you could get more playmakers and more attackers on the team. Are you just making a straight swap because you believe the system is working, but the execution is not? That's the only thing to take away from it.
Yeah.
If it's not fitness related, and you do a straight swap at wide center back with a few minutes left to go in the game, that's the manager saying, the system is working just fine, but we could improve the execution of individuals. So I'm doing my job. Nothing is wrong with how I have this team playing, but right now you're not able to carry out instructions the way I want, so I'm just going to swap you out for the next one. And I actually like our centre-back depth. Like, I think that's the best depth we've had in any position in a long, long time, right? Mm-hmm. Euro potentially work for us. Behind him, Mazraoui, technical, very good. Dilett and Maguire, similar level, pushing each other, both in good form right now. Shaw, Martinez, Heaven. Heaven is a good hedge against Shaw and Martinez being injured. Like, I like our options there a lot. I don't like that all of them are always in the squad, and your way of dealing with leading a goal is to swap one of them out. Like, that's not it, because that's not where our build-up and threat is coming from. You know, so, and you don't have that many ballers. Like, I understand if you bring in on Martinez because you're like, all right, we need somebody to play some defense splitting passes. What are you bringing on Mazraoui for with a few minutes to go? I like him, but what does he know about winning 3-2 in 3-time? This is a fullback, dog.
Yeah. And you know, my final question, because I want to wrap this up, we could talk about United for hours. You and I, we do this every day anyway. But I was going to ask, how long do you think he has left? And do you think he's going to last the season, Ruben Amorim?
Not like this. I think the process could be correct and the outcome could be wrong. I think the process of building a backroom team, right, building a football side structure, is correct. But you could still end up with the wrong result, right? Just because you had, like, the guys before clearly would be wrong guys, right? This weekend, two of recent Formula managers got fired. Mourinho is out of a job because Mourinho was washed when we hired him. Solskjaer is out of a job because Solskjaer is not that good. Ten Hag dropped points in, I think, like, this same match time as we won. Today, he conceded. Yeah, they conceded like 94th or 95th or something.
Yep.
Questions about him. Those are the wrong guys. So you get the wrong guys because you went through the wrong process. No, you go through the right process, but maybe you end up with the wrong guy anyway. That's life. You know, it happens. You can't just be like, well, you know, I did all the right things. How come I didn't? Like, yeah, all right. Didn't work out. And I like Amorim. I think maybe it didn't work out. I think a little bit, the squad is a little bit over-specified to his system, but not that much. You know, when you look at the contract situation, like, yeah, we have 6 senior centre-backs, that's too many, but a couple of them close to being out of contract. You know, we can move on a couple. There's pieces there for players, good players, to play in different systems. So I don't think we have to stick with him. I like him. I like some of the things that I've seen. The results have been abysmal, and the performances haven't been much better. So, as much as I am tired of changing manager all the time, I think it's a higher probability scenario that he's just not that guy. Which is cool. Like, you know, sometimes you just get shit wrong.
Yeah, and you know? I think that... You know, he said it that he's very emotional, wears his heart on his sleeve all in his press conference. I understand that. But when your manager is throwing tantrums and being a petulant 40-year-old on the sideline, it doesn't bode well for me. You know, you got your feet up on the touchline, like as if you're in your mama's house. Like, even your mom won't even let you put your feet on the couch. Like, just slap the back of your head. So,
listen, before you play a game, because before you even play the game, he said he's emotional. And then everybody liked it. You're like, yes, I'm fire. But this is the other side of it. Like, if you're too emotional to, like, keep your words in check after losing to Grimsby in the third match this season, maybe this isn't for you. This is the highest profile job in, at least in the Premier League, right? One of the most scrutinized jobs in football you could have, period.
I think it's one of the most scrutinized jobs in any job in the world. I think
who else has half a billion people watching you on a random Wednesday night and telling you they're either saying like, oh, we have to back him, or this is the worst thing to happen to humanity since chattel slavery, you know? Like, there's no other job where people will be saying, like, doing witchcraft, you know, praying that you drop down dead, you know, or supporting you if you're doing well. So, yeah, he just might not be cut out for it. Like, yeah, Sporting is big in Portugal. United are big everywhere. So, it just might be too big for him at this point in his career.
Yeah, and it's not just United are big in football. United are big in the world. If you go to any random person and show them a United logo, or you tell them Manchester, the first thing they think about is Man United. That's literally first.
Yeah.
You have people who never watch football day in their lives, but they know who Man United is. You ask them about David Beckham, they know who David Beckham is.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a huge club where the pressure is always on. And the thing about Man United is Maynard is that elusive bad bitch that everybody wants. But she doesn't want to be saved right now. But everybody wants to save. And that's the thing about the Maynard job is anybody worth a salt of them wants the job. You know, from your son of the world to anybody else wants the job. So,
but baddies is not for everybody, you know. Swimming in your own pool. Yeah. Right? This is we in deep waters over here.
This is somebody who literally, you know, goes to sleep in Giuseppe Hill. You know, this is baddest of the bad bitches, you know.
This is not for everybody, you know. Date in your tax bracket. If this is not for you, cool. You know, mm-hmm. get you a nice good girl, a nice good church girl from the Portuguese legal. Don't come over here.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. I mean, go get you someone who makes Sunday roast. This is a girl. Doesn't she want to cook?
No, that kitchen is spotless. My appliance is brand new.
Yeah, she uses the oven for her shoes.
Yeah,
like so. This is Maynard is a hard job.
You riding around in the car and you have to change the music because that's her ex singing that song. You know what I mean? Like, is that kind of
We'll see. Anything else you want to add before we get out of here? I appreciate you so much for your time, brother.
Man, good to be on. You know, always all the support you support the show. So yeah, glad to be back. It's been a little minute too.
Yeah, no, don't worry. We're gonna have Brent on a lot more. I'm trying to bring more of my United friends on this year. Because I can't be alone and frustated, you know. I want everybody to understand that it's not just me who has seen these things, you know. We're going through a lot, you know, and we love United. That's the thing about it. It's like, no matter what, we're always going to love United. We'll talk shit all we want, but we love United. That's really what it boils down to.
Wednesday, I felt like I was having a stroke. I felt like I was losing my mind. Yeah. And then, you know what? Like, I was, you know, we were in a group chat together. I was, you know, all of us collectively melting down Wednesday. And guess what? I woke up this morning, left my family at home to go watch United. Played Burnley.
Irresponsible fan base ever. We would cuss this team out, but we are there every single week. You know? Because guess what? Every year is our year, until it's not.
Every year. Every year. By, like, Wednesday, I was like, this is the worst shit I ever seen in my life. Like, this is the worst thing I've seen on TV. Since 9/11. And then today, I was like, you know what? If Liverpool and Arsenal draw tomorrow, we could be right. We could be right in there.
In October, title charge. We could be first in the league by October, you know?
Hey.
Well, hopefully.
From your lips to God's ears.
Yeah. But listen, we're out, everyone. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, share this with your mom, dad, brother, dog, cat, whoever. Share it with everybody. Appreciate you guys so much for listening. I'm Tosin as always. This is Brent. Everyone take it easy. We're out. Peace.
Peace.